fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the December 27th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's kick off with African men's football. We're now 13 days away to the start of the Africa Cup of Nations tournament in Cameroon, the continent's premier football event. 24 teams have been drawn into six groups of four each for the opening round. Group A features Ethiopia, Cape Verde, Burkina Faso, and host Cameroon, a five-time Nations Cup champion. In the tournament's opening match on January 9th, the indomitable Lions of Cameroon will host the Stallions of Burkina Faso in the capital, Yaoundé. For analysis of Group A, Iron Mike Mbonye contacted the chief football writer at ACLSports.com in Nigeria, Fisayo Dairo.
I do think that this is a very tricky group. You know, when you look at the composition of teams in that group and what they have done recently, especially in the World Cup qualifying series, you would agree with me that that group is very tricky. Although one thing I've always held about 24-nation tournaments is the fact that up to three teams can advance from one group. You know, not the regular 16-nation tournament where only the first two advance. So this makes it less tricky. But Cameroon, the talents of Burkina Faso, the Walia of Ethiopia, and the Blue Sharks of Cape Verde, it's an enticing group for me. We saw Cape Verde, you know, push Nigeria all the way during their World Cup qualifying group. We saw Cameroon edging a group that had the elephants of Cote d'Ivoire. We also saw Burkina Faso going all the way head-to-head against African champions Algeria in their own group. So those three teams, especially any of them, can easily advance. And Ethiopia can just decide to evoke their Nations Cup spirits of 2013 and 15, and they might just, again, spring a little bit of surprise there and there. So, like I said, it's a tricky group, but the cushion for the biggest team in that group, which is the Indomitable Lions of Cameroon, is the fact that, one, they are playing at home, so they should be buoyed by home advantage and the vociferous home fans. And then secondly, up to three teams can advance from the group, which shouldn't allow any disaster to happen.
The Cape Verde theme has been rated high following their impressive runs in the World Cup qualifying games. Do you see them causing upsets in the group?
For around a decade now, I think the Blue Sharks of Cape Verde are a team that have been on the periphery of breakthrough, or periphery of greatness in African football. They have not really been able to have that breakthrough which people believe they are due to have. Now, having shown what they are capable of doing in some form during the last World Cup qualifying series when they were in the same group with Nigeria, I do think that this might be their time. And in this group, yes, they will always fancy their chances. Maybe with the exception of the host nation, Cameroon, who, apart from having top quality players spread across Europe, they will also have that extra, that 12th man factor for them. I think Cape Verde can always believe that they can go head-to-head against Burkina Faso or Ethiopia and get points off them, which could see them off to the next round of the competition. So are they capable of springing up surprises? I do think so. They've got some quality players as well, starting from the defense where they have Turkey-based Alexander Pong, and then the midfield, Kenny Rocha, based in Belgium. Not forgetting attack as well, Riyad Mendes, who now plays his club football in the United Arab Emirates these days. These are some of the players that are capable of stirring something positive for the Cape Verdeans in Cameroon.
Do you think Burkina Faso and Ethiopia are minnows in Group A?
We have to be very careful with whom we give that tag of minnows in African football these days. You know, no team or no country will lie low or sit at one place and willfully accept that tag. And we've seen over the past years that one supposed small team will just come out from nowhere and shock the supposed big guns. And in this particular case, I don't think Burkina Faso can really be tagged as the Minnows, because this is a team that got to the final in 2013. This is the country that played Africa's best team at the moment, Algeria, twice in 2021 and did not lose in both games. You have to pay attention to such a team. For Ethiopia, yes, now they're coming to the AFCON with a team predominantly locally based, because they are going through some sort of restructuring of the national team. Then maybe they might be ranked outsiders in that group. But still, I think the word Minnows might be a little too harsh on any team, particularly in Group A, because aside Cameroon, Cape Verde and Burkina Faso, who I think are the favorites, any of them can always fancy their chance. All you need in such a group is 4 points, a win and a draw, and you put yourself in a good state to be among the top best losers from all the groups and advance to the second round.
That's Fisayo Dairo, the chief football writer at ACLSports.com in Nigeria. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Port Harcourt, Nigeria.
Sporty greetings. This is Emmanuel Amuneke, former Nigerian player, former Tanzanian coach. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Many thanks. Remain blessed and stay safe. God bless you.
Zimbabwe is in Group B for the upcoming Africa Cup of Nations football tournament, along with Guinea, Malawi, and Senegal. Zimbabwe football recently received a sharp reprimand from FIFA, the sport's international governing body. FIFA threatened to suspend Zimbabwe from participating in international matches and may impose other penalties. Addie Gondo reports from Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
The Sports and Recreation Commission suspended the board of the Zimbabwe Football Association last month. The commission alleged there had been mismanagement in ZIFA, a lack of accountability in the use of public funds, and reports of sexual harassment of female referees. In response, FIFA officials sent a letter to the ZIFA General Secretary, Joseph Mamuzi, directing the Sports and Recreation Commission to reverse its decision to suspend ZIFA before 3 January or face disciplinary action. FIFA stressed in the letter that it is committed to investigating allegations brought forward by the SRC when finished with all relevant documentation. Traditionally, the World Football Body assesses the sole mandate of removing and appointing new committees in cases of alleged wrongdoing. Observers say that the list of penalties include a ban from participating at next year's Africa Cup of Nations tournament, no women's AFCON qualifying matches, and a ban on international play. It could also lead to FIFA ending its grant to Zimbabwe football, which total more than US$1 million a year. Sports writer Lavmo Dube with the Ezemithlalo online sports news site says the SRC decision to suspend the ZIFA board was expected.
There have been cries that football in the country is stagnant and it needs a new crop of administrators to come in and take it to a higher level.
Dube says that government interference in any sporting association is generally not welcome.
But the good thing about it at times is it keeps people under check. There is a tendency, of course, by national associations to run to international mother bodies and report that there's interference. But when they are stranded and they need money for some of their activities, the first person that they think of is government.
The SRC board chairman, Gerard Mulochwa, says the country is prepared to deal with the FIFA ban and use any sanctions to correct what has gone wrong with Zimbabwean football. It has set up an 8-member ZIFA restructuring committee to steer the organization until December 2022. The restructuring committee is to oversee fresh elections at ZIFA, implement a variety of reforms, and develop a 4-year strategic plan with a sustainable funding model for football in Zimbabwe. Vincent Pamire, a former ZIFA president, says the current ZIFA board is out of its depth as far as managing soccer in the country is concerned, and the Sports Commission is justified in taking a stand.
The Sports Commission delayed taking this action.
He, however, acknowledges that the country is bound to clash with FIFA.
Really, I can see us not going anywhere as far as our relationship with the FIFA is concerned.
In early December, the ZIFA Executive Committee appealed its suspension in the administrative court. FIFA says it is committed to investigating the allegations against ZIFA as soon as the SRC had shared all relevant documentation brought before courts in Zimbabwe with FIFA's own independent judicial bodies. reporting for Sunnyside of Sports. This is Adigwando in Bulawayo.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll explore the history and experiences of the African diaspora and how their connection to the continent has changed over generations. We'll also profile young Americans of African descent making their mark in U.S. politics. Join me, Heidi Adams, for the next Straight Talk Africa this Wednesday at 18:30 UTC.
You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Prince Nesta joins us once again for a look at the weekend football action in the English Premier League. Sporty festive greetings, Prince.
Sporty festive greetings to you too, Sonny, and I do hope you're enjoying your holidays. English striker of Nigerian descent Bukayo Saka scored twice to help Arsenal seal a 5-0 victory over Norwich in the Premier League. The 20-year-old has now officially been involved in 5 goals and 4 assists for the Gunners in the Premier League this season. Kieran Tierney, Alexandre Lacazette and substitute Emile Smith-Rowe also registered their names on the scoresheet to add more misery on the bottom of the table side. The victory cements Arsenal's place in the Premier League top 4 after winning 3 games in a row. The game marked 2 years since Arteta's first match in charge of the Gunners, and the Spaniard did not hesitate to appreciate his team's performance.
In this festive period, you have to keep the focus and the performance level really high against a team that here, against top teams, they don't really well, even if they didn't win. And I think today we had great performance and scored some great goals and a big away win. All the phases are much better done, so we arrive in much better conditions to the final third. We are able to counter-press in those positions. And then you need the effectiveness and the confidence, as you mentioned, to have to make the right action and put the ball in the net.
Norwich City boss Dean Smith also expressed his frustrations with his team's performance.
I'm bitterly disappointed, but my overriding emotion is anger, to be honest, because I haven't seen that coming the last week. We've trained okay. I know players have come onto the training pitch at different times because of illness or injury, but that was too many unforced errors. You know, they've got a left footer playing right, and we've spoke about taking him on the outside, same as Martinelli, the other, taking him on the outside, and we've allowed him to come inside and score 2 goals. We've allowed Kieran Tierney to get on the outside of us and don't lay a glove on him, runs from the halfway line, and then 2 soft goals at the end as well, 2 soft free kick. And there needs to be more drive. Our standards, they set the standards themselves with the first 4 to 5 games that I've had here, and the last 2 games have been way well below. We can't get away from the fact that we haven't scored for the last 4 games, despite creating big chances in, you know, certainly the first couple of games, and you know, I can accept that, but today didn't do enough to create big enough chances in the game.
In other fixtures, Algerian captain Riyad Mahrez, English striker of Jamaican descent Raheem Sterling, Kevin De Bruyne, Ilkay Gundogan and Aymeric Laporte all scored for Manchester City, who cruised to a 6-3 win against Leicester at the Etihad Stadium. English wing of Nigerian descent Ademola Lookman and James Maddison scored twice in 4 minutes, while Nigerian striker Kelechi Iheanacho slotted home the third, but it wasn't enough to deny City victory. Here's Manchester City coach Pep Guardiola's thoughts on the match.
Yeah, we make an exceptional first half, but even in the first half, we did really well when they had the ball, always arriving in the positions to be punished. And we spoke in the halftime, they changed the shape and 5 in the back, and they defend so deep, waiting the actions, and immediately they found 2 goals. And after, we didn't know if we attack or more cautious, and yeah, we were lucky that at the end, with set pieces, we could score the 5th and the 6th goal. Otherwise, should have been problems until the end, because football is over when it's over, and I get teams, good teams like Leicester, with the quality that they have, everything can happen.
Those Manchester City boss Pep Guardiola speaking after his team defeated Leicester City in the Premier League. City have now scored 17 goals in their past 3 games and remain top in the league with 47 points. Second place Chelsea picked up a much-needed 3-1 away win against Aston Villa on Boxing Day, thanks to goals from Belgian star of Congolese descent Romelu Lukaku and Italian playmaker Jorginho. Jorginho's two penalties during the match also broke the Premier League record for the most penalties scored in a single calendar year. Romelu Lukaku, whose introduction into the game proved pivotal for the Blues, reflected on the match.
I think I needed a performance like this today. You know, it's been difficult, you know, getting like ends of the game. You know, every footballer wants to be on the pitch. The manager has his reasons, but, you know, I kept working hard. And, you know, today was, you know, it was good for us to win. And for myself personally, I'm happy with my performance enough to push on.
Lukaku's boss, Thomas Tuchel, also welcomed the 3 points while also accusing the Premier League of wrecking Chelsea's season.
Well, it's a big victory. It's very hard to play here. And when you go one goal behind Villa Park, it's even more difficult, but the reaction was very, very good. Mentality was outstanding. So a well-deserved win. We did not allow any chances, and we created a lot of big chances from possession and also from counter-attack. So job done. But yeah, we are worried. We have another injured players. We play with players, and we play against team who have no international duty. I mean, 5 changes were invented because of Corona. The whole Europe has a winter break, and we play through, and on which shoulders we put it? On the players' shoulders, okay? So this is the result now. They make us play all the time, even if we have COVID or something else, and now we have new injuries, and this will not stop. It cannot stop.
There's Chelsea manager Thomas Tuchel speaking to the media after his team came from behind to beat Aston Villa at Villa Park. England captain Harry Kane scored for the second consecutive Premier League game to help Tottenham Hotspur secure a 3-0 win over Crystal Palace. Lucas Moura doubled their lead before Son Heung-min sealed the victory for Spurs, with the Eagles shorthanded thanks to Ivorian forward Wilfried Zaha's red card after 2 bookable offences. The Eagles' request to postpone the match because of a COVID-19 outbreak that included a positive test for French manager of Senegalese descent Patrick Vieira was also denied by the Premier League. Spurs have now maintained their excellent record under their new coach Antonio Conte, who is quite pleased with his team's performance.
We started the game a bit slow. Despite this, we created chances to score, but I think that in the first 20 minutes we started a bit slow. Then instead we improved the quality with the ball and the intensity, good pressure, and we scored twice. And then for sure when we played against 10 men, it was easier for us. But despite this, I think you must be focused, you must be brilliant. It happened in my career against a man that I lost a game. Instead, my players was very focused. Another clean sheet is very important to score 3 goals. For sure we could score more. But a lot of positive things after this game. But we have to know that in 2 days we have to play against a team very strong, like Southampton, and now we have to recover and then to make the best decision for the start 11, because it won't be easy for us, but it won't be easy for other teams to play after 2 days.
Conte's team moves to 5th place in the Premier League table and still trail 4th place Arsenal by 6 points, but with 3 games in hand. Newcastle United are scheduled to square it off against Manchester United on Monday at St. James's Park. The Magpies have only won 2 of their past 4 Premier League home games against Manchester United and did lose the exact fixture 4-1 last season. Manchester United players will also be banking on the fact that they have won their past 4 Premier League games against Newcastle. The Magpies have conceded 79 Premier League goals in 2021, while the Red Devils have won both of their 2 Premier League games so far under their new coach Ralf Rangnick. Players from other major European leagues, including the French League, La Liga, Serie A and the Bundesliga, are currently taking a break through the holiday season and will only resume in January. 81-year-old 3-time World Cup winner Pelé has been discharged from hospital where he was undergoing cancer treatment. The Brazilian legend, considered the greatest player of all time, tweeted, and I quote, "The photo of me smiling is not in vain. As promised, I'm going to spend Christmas with my family. I'm going back home. Thank you for all the thoughtful messages." End of quote. The soccer great was hospitalized on December 8th for chemotherapy treatment of a colon tumor and has previously undergone surgery to remove a tumor from his right colon. He burst onto the international stage as a teenager during the 1958 World Cup and has since remained in the spotlight years since his retirement through international product endorsements and as an outspoken public figure. Reporting for the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm Prince Nestor.
Thanks, Prince. And we here at the Sunny Side of Sports wish Pele well. On Christmas Day, a smiling Pele posed for a photo in front of a Christmas tree, and Pele tweeted, and I quote, "Today, I hope you are living moments of love, peace, and unity, just like me. Merry Christmas, my friends."
This is the voice of America. Washington, Bob, D.C.
Here in Washington, Cameroonian basketball star Joel Embiid had another big game Sunday night when he helped lead the Philadelphia 76ers to a 117-96 victory over the Washington Wizards. Embiid scored a game-high 36 points and also grabbed 13 rebounds as Philadelphia cruised to the big win. Philadelphia and Washington now have identical records, 17 wins and 16 losses. Each team had three players in the NBA's COVID-19 health and safety protocols, including Washington scoring leader Bradley Beal. In a matchup of Florida-based NBA teams, the Miami Heat beat the visiting Orlando Magic by 10 points, as we hear now from the AP's Dave Ferry.
Jimmy Butler returned from a bruised tailbone to score 17 points and grab 11 rebounds as the Heat topped the Magic 93-83.
It's been fun to watch guys gain confidence, get more and more comfortable. But I'm not going to lie, if I was to say that, like, I didn't miss the game and out there competing, so I'm glad to be back.
Caleb Martin added 17 points, and Omer Yurtseven was productive in his first career start at center, finishing with 16 points and 15 boards in Miami's third straight win.
Spo and the entire team and everybody kind of put their faith in me, too, starting from the summer. So this just means everything. The opportunity means everything, and I'm grateful for it.
Butler had missed 12 of Miami's last 13 games because of the injury. Martin sat out Miami's previous seven games because of a stint in the NBA's health and safety protocols. Gary Harris scored 20 for the Magic, which led 21-12 before Miami tied it on a 12-3 run. I'm Dave Ferry.
Thanks, Dave. From Miami, let's go west across the USA to Los Angeles, California. That's where the Denver Nuggets edged the Los Angeles Clippers by 3 points. The AP's Mark Myers reports from Los Angeles.
In a game that came down to the wire, the Nuggets beat the Clippers 103-100. Denver blew a 17-point third-quarter lead, and then had to overcome a 9-point deficit in the fourth to squeeze out the narrow victory. Nuggets coach Mike Malone after the game.
They went on their run, give them credit, but we responded the way we needed to. Getting stops, sharing the ball, executing. It was a little bit of an adventure there at the end, but we did enough to pull out the win.
Nikola Jokic had a monster night with 26 points and 22 rebounds.
In the fourth quarter, we came back. You know, they were up something, I don't know how many, and we just didn't want to probably quit. We fought. It was a really interesting game probably to watch.
Mark Myers, Los Angeles.
Sporty greetings. This is Masai Ujiri, the president of Toronto Raptors Basketball, president of Giants of Africa Foundation. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Masai Ujiri's Toronto Raptors had their wings clipped Sunday by the Cleveland Cavaliers, and I do mean clipped. The Cavaliers crushed the visiting Raptors 144-99. Now, Toronto basically put a makeshift team onto the court. the Raptors have 10 players, yes, 10 players in the NBA's COVID-19 health and safety protocols, including top scorer Fred VanVleet, rookie Scottie Barnes, and Cameroonian star Pascal Siakam. Raptors coach Nick Nurse said after the lopsided defeat, "We had to take a pretty good loss tonight, but we'll bounce back." South Africa's most decorated Olympian, swimmer Chad Leclo, bounced back from disappointment at this year's Tokyo Games to win a World Cup title. VOA's Gwen Uten has more details for us. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Last October in Berlin, Chad Leclo won gold in the 200-meter butterfly and captured his 146th World Cup title. The medal could be viewed as vindication after coming up empty-handed at last summer's Tokyo Games, where he finished fifth in the 200-meter butterfly final and failed to qualify for the 100-meter butterfly. And in August, Leclo told Reuters News lessons were learned from his last Olympic run in Tokyo.
I was a little sad not to get on the podium, obviously, because, you know, I'd worked really hard for this and, you know, things happen. Tough year for everyone, but I take it on the chin. I take the responsibility. There's no problem, you know, this will make me stronger.
Leclo famously won gold at the London Olympics in 2012 when he defeated American world record holder Michael Phelps in the 200-meter butterfly. He also won silver in the 100-meter butterfly at those games. He collected two more silver medals 4 years later in Rio. Leclo began on a high at this year's games in Tokyo when the star swimmer represented South Africa as the flag bearer at opening ceremony. But any hopes of adding to his medals were dashed when he failed to reach the podium in either of his signature 100 or 200 meter butterfly events. Leclo said the lead up to the games had been particularly tough. South Africa was one of the hardest hit countries in Africa during the coronavirus pandemic, and Leclo lost his uncle to COVID-19 just before Christmas last year. And while he doesn't make excuses for his performance in Tokyo, Leclo admitted the past year had taken its toll.
This year, I think for everybody, if I can say it, you know, it's been very tough for me in particular, but you know, sometimes, you know, at the end of the day, when the history books are written, they don't talk about the bad stuff that happened to individual people. They just see the results, they see the medals. So my journey's been unique. I haven't had an easy journey from day one. You know, I came from a little kid in Pantan, you know, to the great heights of London Olympics and the ups and downs of Rio and, of course, Tokyo now. But, you know, I think all these experiences has changed me, you know. It's made me a different man that I was even 5 years ago. You know, I have a different perspective.
Leclo has not said whether or not he will appear at the 2024 Paris Olympics, but at age 29, he does plan to continue his legacy, both in and out of the pool.
You know, my legacy is not just about Olympics, it's about everything else, you know. It's about how you carry yourself outside the pool for the next generation, you know. When I started my foundation, the Chad Leclo Foundation, a year ago, it was made to inspire kids, to put them through, you know, help them have a better opportunity, especially in swimming and in sports, than maybe I did and Cameron did, and to show that you can do it from back home, you know. So, you know, my journey is not just about maybe winning gold medals now. You know, I've seen that it branches off in different directions, but I do believe that I don't want to, you know, I don't want to jinx anything, but I can stand here from, you know, not in the greatest place, you know, but I still believe that I'll be a champion again one day.
And with his record 146th World Cup title, Leclo further extends his lead on the list of all-time swimming World Cup victories. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. Team South Africa's big Olympic star this year was another swimmer, Tatjana Schoonmaker. She won a gold and a silver medal at the Tokyo Games. Yes, the ladies definitely led the way for Team South Africa. South Africa's other Olympic medal came from Bianca Buitendag. She won a silver medal in women's shortboard surfing.
And that wraps up the December 27th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports. I get it.